I am so excited about the person you're going to get to hear from right now. I've only known him about a year. I actually met him last year in March at a conference that he had flown in to speak at, and I was there too. And I'd heard a little bit about him because he's got lots of fans that are people that I know that are friends. But I was blown away when I saw him get up to speak, because not only was he a conventional doctor, an MD, in specializing in internal medicine, what he had done is he had also learned functional medicine and created a huge clinic in Houston and was helping a lot of people that were friends of mine. They were going to him, and literally, like, amazing things were happening in their life. But I got a chance to experience that. I got a chance to see him speak, see him talk. He also, our guest, Dr. Cheng Ron, MD, was just voted, and I just found this out, was just voted the top internal medicine doctor in all of Houston. And it's interesting because it was voted on by other doctors, conventional doctors, which, you know, you have to be really amazing, Cheng, to get them to vote for you in light of the way that you practice medicine, which is Western, but also integrating some Eastern practices, which we're going to talk about today, energy medicine and functional medicine. So I'm so excited to have you here. He also has become, by the way, my go-to MD. I love the fact that he's got education in traditional Western medicine. So I know that he's a scientist. He's gone down that road. But the real reason I call him is because he's got an open mind. And so if I've got a question on a supplement, or if I've got a question for a family member of mine, or anything happening for me health-wise, this is my go-to doctor. So I'm really excited to introduce him to you. And so, Cheng, welcome to the Global Energy Healing Summit. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. What a fabulous introduction. I'm pretty humbled by that. And I really want to thank you for having me. And we're going to have some fun today talking about some of my favorite topics. So I can't wait.
Awesome. And I asked you to start with a little stat. I gave him a little heads up. What's something that might even be a little bit shocking, but what's one reason why we should really pay attention to what you have to say today?
You know, in 2016, the British Medical Journal published this article, and it says that medical errors were the third leading cause of death in the United States.
Wow.
And so back in 2016, that was a shocker for me, because I didn't really know what to make of it. And what I really found out through that experience, and that journal is one of the propelling things that launched me into integrative health and functional medicine.
Yeah. So in case you missed that, medical errors are a huge cause of death. Things that people go in to see their doctors for and they get prescriptions end up killing them. That's pretty crazy. And so we're going to listen to a doctor that was inspired by that and literally changed his practice so that he wasn't going to be part of that. He was going to be part of truly healing people. What you're going to give us a lot of information around energy healing and ways we can, things we can do to implement that in our lives. What's the hope at the end of this call? What's the big promise here that at the end of this, I call it a call, but at the end of this little interview, What are people going to be able to do? How are they going to be able to think? What do you want to make different in their lives?
People are going to be absolutely empowered by the end of this interview, because there's so many things around us that consist of energy, but we use different terms, but it's on a daily interaction with our friends, with our family, and there's so much control over your own health. And I would love for people to know that.
I love that. Control over your own health, everybody. That's what you need. So go back to you have this traditional Western medicine education, although you did grow up with a mom who's a very famous acupuncturist and treats lots of celebrities. So you had some of the background in the Eastern philosophy, but you were going along practicing as an internal medicine doctor, going the traditional path. You said you saw that statistic back in 2016. That was a huge risk, though, to make a change. You had a nice practice. You did almost a 180. Like, what gave you the courage to make that change?
Well, you know, so my mom is a very famous Chinese medicine doctor, acupuncture, herbal therapy. But my dad is just as famous. He's an MD, PhD. He's currently one of the deans of pharmacology at the University of Houston. So I had science throughout my whole life, and I've always tied together the Eastern and Western philosophies. So it was normal for me. The problem is, you know, when I finished my residency out of New York, at New York Presbyterian Queens, got into private practice, it just wasn't as rewarding, right? Because a lot of people were coming, getting the prescriptions and whatnot. And the system in the United States is not really designed to create this communication and integrative mindset. So the risk that I took was really understanding why was it that statistic we talked about at the very beginning, you know, medical errors was creating such a huge effect on the country. And so at that time, I was doing outpatient medicine, primary care. I was also doing critical care medicine in the hospital, and I was a hospice and palliative care doctor. Wow. And I was also a sports medicine doctor. So I saw people from when they're very young to their deathbed. And so that variety gave me this massive appreciation for life.
Yeah.
I think that people may think, well, what's sports medicine have to do with intensive care, have to do with hospital medicine? Well, the energetics are identical, and we have to respect that. And I learned that from my mother. And so thinking about how medical errors are really creating a detriment in the country, I really had to dig deeper on why that is.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And so energy medicine, a lot of people think it's kind of out there, not people listening, hopefully, to this interview, because you came here for a reason, but many people think it's a little weird. It's out there. It's airy-fairy. You actually ground it in science. Because you're a scientist. I mean, first and foremost, you want to do things that work, that will cause great effects. Talk about the science of energy medicine.
So I want people to understand that the word science, let's just kind of define what that is. Science is something that can be traditionally proven in a concept that's usually very material and something that's tangible. Mm-hmm. Problem in America is that science has been deep-rooted in the fundamental algorithms to validate pharmaceutical drugs. We call that a double-blinded randomized controlled trial. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is, you know what, we're gonna change one variable and see how it affects other things over a period of time, and we're gonna validate that drug. That's not how our body works. And in fact, if you look at how medicine is practiced, most of the medications that we give for that one effect has a ton of side effects, right? So you see these pharmaceutical commercials at 8 p.m. at nighttime, they go on through all the beautiful scenery, you see all the side effects. Those side effects is coming from one of the mechanisms of the medication. That's huge downstream effect. And they list multiple side effects, but I call that the energetics of change. Mm. And all those side effects are basically little names to define the energetics of change. And so here's the real deal, and most doctors don't like to talk about this, but a majority of the medicines that the doctors prescribe do not prolong life.
Mm.
Is that surprising? And so I'll give you some example. There's blood pressure medicine in different classes. Some classes do prolong life, most of them don't. There's cardiovascular medicine, and some people it prolongs life, but most of them don't,
right?
And then there's diabetes medicine. Some prolong life, but most of them don't. And so the question is, like, why are these drugs made for these specific purposes?
Yeah.
Because the way that medicine defines success is a little messed up. It has nothing to do with necessarily just prolonging life, but with some number that they're trying to hit, right?
Yeah.
Cholesterol medicine, one of the great examples. Cholesterol medicine, you can get the numbers down, but does it prolong life? Well, not really. We don't know.
Yeah.
And some people, it can hurt them. And so understanding that, well, that's why medical errors can lead to high causes of death in the United States. But here's how I define energy medicine. I think we have to have a overarching understanding of what energy medicine is.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, if you walk into a doctor's office and someone slaps a blood pressure cuff on your arm, it squeezes it, and the blood pressure is registering a very high number because you're either very scared or something like that, and then the doctor say, well, your blood pressure is high, let's test it again. You test it again, it's still high. Well, let's push you on some medications. And that's usually the end of the story for the next 90 days until the doctor sees you again, right? Well, no one's really looking at, well, what is your blood pressure trend and all these different things. What causes your blood pressure to trend up and down has to do with your daily interactions, the energy of it, okay?
Yeah.
So let's say you're just waking up in the morning and you're going to breakfast, but you're in a hurry, so you have no time. Your blood pressure's creeping up. Your heart rate's creeping up.
Yeah.
Your hormones are creeping up. The energetics of it came from intention, the intention to get somewhere quickly and bypass something that is supposed to slow you down.
Right.
But because it's slowing down, you don't want to do it, although that something is just so important, right? Yeah. And so that something is an intention. So part of the beginning of all energy is an intention. So if I say, hey, I intend to slow down, sit down, breakfast with my family on a daily basis, that's my ritual routine, then guess what? Your blood pressure is not going to be up. Your heart rate's not going to be up, right?
Yeah.
And your hormones are going to be relatively balanced and your brain waves are going to be balanced. So these are things that we can now measure. And in fact, at Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine here in Houston, that's what we do. We put people in really cool brainwave activity machines called QEEG, and the device is called BrainView, and we actually literally look at what their brain is doing for the next 24 minutes.
Yeah.
And we tell them to focus on something, we tell them to calm down, and some people are so primed to skip over things that slow them down, their brain is in the circuitry, and that circuitry is the energetics behind all this.
Right.
That brain circuitry can create the blood pressure issues, the blood sugar issues, the thyroid issues, the adrenal issues and whatnot. And these are all just different names that we have to describe phenomenon of energy with a huge downstream effect. So that's what I like to define as energy medicine first. And then we can prove that this actually is the case. So Tom, this is something that I like to tell people and they're always very surprised. So up until 3 months of age, an infant can synchronize the heart rate as well as brain frequencies with their mom.
Wow. Yeah.
So how do we describe that in conventional medicine? Well, we really can't. Something that happens, right? There's energetics for this, right? I can also tell you that in animal models, you can actually transfer memory from one animal to another by giving the animal its own RNA. So once it transfers over, the other animal starts adapting behaviors of what the first animal learned. Mm-hmm. Okay? We call it mRNA translation. So what that means is that knowledge can be passed on. That's the energetics of it.
Mm-hmm.
In science, we call this epigenetic expression. So there's genetic expression, which is your genes that you're born with. And then epigenetics means outside of genetics, there's something affecting the gene expression that is learned, that is exposed. And that's what energy really is. And so we take a look at that and we say, okay, well, we recognize that it exists. Well, what are some things in the conventional medicine side that has already been FDA approved to treat people using energetic medicine? The best example I can give you is TMS, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation, which has helped hundreds of thousands of people with depression through obsessive compulsive disorder, right? And it's usually, it's magnets affecting one particular area of the brain. That's the energetics of it, right?
Yeah.
And I can tell you that 3 years ago, there's someone who looked at corpses of people who have little bundles of connective tissue under points, and these points correlate, 80% of the points correlate with acupuncture points that they found 5,000 years ago.
Wow.
And they find these are connected along these highways, which acupuncturists call meridians. So these are physical bundles we can actually see, what's called the extracellular matrix, okay? So you have so many things that are deep-rooted in in evidence that we can see, and we're correlating to the energetics of medicine. So I think that we're in a field that's widely acceptable. We're also in the field that people can change the energetics within an instant. And that's what's really exciting.
I love that. And I love the example you started off with too about blood pressure, because how many people around the world have gone in, they're already a little nervous to be in the physician's office. Their blood pressure is up, right? The doctor tells them calm down, but they're still in the office. And now they just heard my blood pressure is up. So it's still up. And then immediately the fix is take this pill. And also, which is a very weak way to try and fix an energetic problem, as you described blood pressure is, there's times during the day when everybody's blood pressure is a little bit up. Like when you're exercising, your blood pressure is going to go up, but it comes back down. And so now somebody not only is told take a pill, but they're told by an authority figure, you've got high blood pressure. So now they adopt that energetically and probably recreate it every time they come back in. And the mechanism that's being treated is not, it's treating the symptom, not the cause. I love the fact that you've identified that, because I know a lot of people listening to this probably have struggled with that, or cholesterol, or different things they've been told that they don't have any control over. You know, take this pill, it's the only hope. The thing that scares me is when I watch these, you know, I'm watching a sporting event on TV, and then, you know, drug commercial after drug commercial, and, you know, it makes it look like, hey, this is pretty cool. And then, as you said, they do the side effects. Oh my God, you listen to some of these side effects, it's like, who would take that thing? Like, who? It's just crazy. So love the examples. I love how you really have kind of talked about too, there's a science to energy. Just like, I mean, even these pills are impacting your energy at the end of the day, but in a way where they're probably weakening you because it's dealing at a top level. What is the, what's the most important thing you've learned, and since you've switched over to functional medicine, what's the most important thing you've learned about people's mindsets and how they can be influenced to help cause a shift in energy?
The placebo is the most powerful weapon against disease.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that. Yeah. So talk about the placebo and the nocebo effect a little bit.
I'll tell you what, you know, I'll break it down. It's really simple. You know, in pharmaceutical studies, we know that if someone believes that this is real, there is an effect on it. So the study that was done in 2017 looked at thousands of people with osteoarthritis, which is basically bone-on-bone arthritis, weakness of the knee. And then they're all diagnosed with it. They all have imaging that suggests that there's severe arthritis. But they looked at pills compared to placebo, and the placebo had a massive effect on people improving pain. Like, massive effect. Yeah. Yet still bone-on-bone arthritis, right? As it turns out, not only are they having less pain, they actually have less inflammation. So there's other studies looking at and how that there's less local inflammation, which means inflammation in that area where there's pain, if they believe that this pill, this placebo, is something that's good for them.
And there's nothing in the pill that was going to cause that.
Bingo.
It's just their belief about the pill.
There's a lot in the pill. That there's energy in that pill. That pill only has energy because the people who took that pill gave it energy.
Nice. Yeah. Great way to explain that. Yeah. I love that.
And so, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza came out with this book called You Are the Placebo, and it's a fabulous understanding of how much control you have over the things that are around you. The problem, Tom, right now, is that the placebo effect is heavily influenced by digital media. Let's go back to that blood pressure example, right? So the doctor say, hey, you got this high blood pressure, I want to put you on a medicine. So someone goes and looks up online that there's this medication has all these different side effects, they're like, I don't want to take it. There's already negative energy towards that thing, that pill.
Yeah.
They're forced to take it by their family or by whoever it is, and they take it, and they're almost guaranteed to have that side effect. They already know the writing on the wall.
Right.
Right. And then there's resentment against the family, against the doctor, and then the energy just goes kaput, right?
Yeah.
Of course, your blood pressure is going to remain high because you just got pissed off.
Even though you're taking the medication. Yeah.
So that's how powerful the placebo is. You know, there's studies looking at people with cancer treatment with placebo. There's people who get the placebo, and these group of people have less rates of progressing cancer.
Yeah.
Because the person gave the energy to the placebo and you take it. And there's a reason it's going on. But from a pharmaceutical research, they just call it the placebo effect. And I'm like, that's awesome. You know, give me the placebo effect because it's just such a powerful thing. And so pharmaceutical company says, you know, this pill didn't outperform placebo. So therefore this pill is not effective. And so I'm looking at it like, man, like I want to talk to the placebo group and see what they're
right.
So that's the true energy that's behind it. It's the intention. I intend for this pill with nothing in it, or I don't know there's nothing in it, to do well for me. And something happens energetically. We call it epigenetic change.
Yeah.
Epigenetics outside the genetic, and something changes your gene expression that allows for downstream things to happen. So that's the opposite of a side effect. It's a really good effect.
Yeah. And so even when somebody says, you know, I've got this cancer gene that's supposed to cause cancer, I've got the heart disease gene, you're saying if you buy into that, yep, well, you have the gene, right? You have the gene that's identified with that in the past. If you buy into it, then it will tend to come to fruition. But if you go, hey, I got the gene, but I'm healthy, I'm strong, and you practice a lot of things that you would teach them to do, epigenetics can cause that gene not to express itself in the way that maybe it did in your ancestors or your neighbor or whoever else.
So I'm gonna give you a really good example of this, and this may come really clear. So there's this gene, and it used to be called the God gene, because if you have this gene, you live longer. But it's called the Alzheimer's gene. We call it the apoprotein E4. Okay. I have one of
those. That's the same thing? The God gene and the Alzheimer's gene are the same thing?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So this example is going to blow your mind. So the reason was called the God gene is they see this emerge about 10,000 years ago in Homo sapiens. And they said, this gene allows me, the walking man or woman, to mount more of an inflammatory response. And at that time, you know, I was barefoot, I'm walking on dung, you know, I'm getting clawed by tigers and mosquitoes. That inflammation was beneficial for me. Fast forward, right now we're in 2021. Well, all this inflammation can be detrimental. So you can have over-inflammation. Mm. And now it's called the Alzheimer's gene, because you have two copies of the gene, you have over 90% chance of developing Alzheimer's disease, you know, before the age of 75. And so, okay, so we know that's the case, but we also know that there's epigenetics, meaning outside signaling, that affects this gene. Well, lo and behold, the APOE4 gene in cardiology is also called the fat metabolism gene. Mm. And so not only does it affect inflammation, it affects your fat metabolism, all these different things. And so different specialties look at this in sort of a different view. So for me, I was like, great, we know that you have this genotype, but that's okay, because we can try to optimize everything around it, which is the energetics or the
stuff of it. Yeah.
And you can not only shut off some of the components that causes you to develop bad things from the gene, but you can. These are all modifiable risks that people don't understand.
That makes total sense. Yeah. So hey, you're talking about, you know, this is so great. You know, when you discovered it, you're like, wow, this is so cool. Why is it not adopted throughout all the doctors that are practicing? Why is it still such a tough sell to most of the doctors that people that are watching this interview are going to?
Well, Tom, it's actually not a tough sell. Most doctors know about stuff like this. But, you know, I'm going to walk through what medical training really is, right? Okay. So you have school, you learn your stuff, and then you have your internship, which is usually the first year of residency, where you just get thrown in and do a bunch of stuff. You're just trying to survive. And then you go through residency, and then maybe you do specialty, do a fellowship. That entire sequence, entire, you know, line-by-line sequence, There's curated rules around each step of training, and these rules are guidelines. There's guidelines that are there that are put forth by different bodies of either the government or specialty groups. And these guidelines are what doctors are supposed to adhere by. If you don't adhere by, that means you're going outside the standard of practice and you have liability, like legal liability.
That's pretty scary. Yeah.
Well, it was meant to protect the public.
Yeah.
In reality, you have to look at who's making the guidelines, because the guidelines before 1980, for those people who had heart attacks, they were given drugs that slow their heart rate down so their heart doesn't overwork. And then lo and behold, the next year, they reversed the guidelines because people were dying more than they were surviving on that heart drug, you know?
They speed it up now.
Yeah, it's called IV beta blockers.
Right.
So for me as a young doc, learning the history of that, I was like, wow, this is like standard of practice before 1980 to do this. Now we're like, no, you don't want to do that. You want to leave the patient alone. We learn from mistakes. But why was it so rooted in the standard of practice before then? It's because there's guidelines that are made, and guidelines have different levels of evidence. A lot of them is level evidence E, which is expert opinion. You have to look at who the experts are, right?
Yeah.
That's not what we were taught to do in medical school. We were just like, hey, these are the guidelines. So there's nothing wrong with the guidelines, right? For the most part, the guidelines are actually pretty good, but there's different parts of the guidelines that tend to be ignored. For example, the cholesterol guidelines. Mm-hmm. The new cholesterol guidelines says you should have 3 months of a lifestyle modification prior to prescribing this drug. How many doctors do you think wait that 3 months? It's the very first step.
Yeah, wow. Probably not many, right?
No, and people bypass it because we're not taught in school to deal with people for that first, and like, what do we do for the first 2 months? I can't prescribe you a drug. You know, I get really antsy and nervous.
Yeah.
And so in integrative medicine, and especially in functional medicine, we looked at, okay, well, there's different functionalities we can look at. We could look at diet, we could look at stuff like this. We're not trained in it, you know, officially or formally trained in it. And so, but that 90 days is a golden period. And that golden period established some really good energetics.
Yep.
What is your support system? What's going on at home? You know, are you on intoxicating agents like alcohol? Are you having addictive behaviors like cigarette smoking, whatever it is? And so these are just barely touched on, but there's a lot of mind-body medicine that really needs to be practiced for that to be balanced, right? And so a lot of times I tag my mom in. My mom's an acupuncture and herbal specialist.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, you know, this person has a lot of like sugar addictions. Like, what can we do from that side? So I see a lot of successes come from my mom's clinic. They come back, work with them, and that's how we integrate everything together. But there's an energetics to it, right? And acupuncture point going into a bundle of something called the extracellular matrix in this tissue place will release a lot of different things throughout the body, and we can actually see that. And then saying that, okay, now that you're more balanced energetically, let's come over here and let's talk about the rest. What are we looking at from the conventional medicine side? What markers are we looking at? And that's where healthcare is supposed to go. And I think we're heading in the right direction.
I love it. So, and you started off with the example of the blood pressure. You look at people differently. You don't look at just a number on a gauge. You look at that as a being that's got energy, that something's being excited in them right now, or they are hurrying too much, I think you said. You also just mentioned something about the energetics of the environment that they're in, like, you know, what's going on at their home. How important is that, the environments and what's going on at home, what's going on at work? Does that explain how that plays into people's energy and their health?
Absolutely. So whenever someone comes into the office, and me and my entire team, I mean, the first question out of our mouths is generally, hey, what is your goal? Like, what do you want to achieve? And after we list out what you want to achieve, it's like, oh, what are some things that are inhibiting you from getting to your goal?
Yeah.
2 out of 10 is something at home, it's something in the family, something at work. Yeah. And so we know that there's barriers in which you, the patient, perceive to have, and most of it's rooted in the home. That's what we want to talk about first. And say, hey, what can I do as a doctor or my health coach? What can I do as a health coach to help you overcome this barrier, to help you empower you to do the things that are necessary to get you to the next step? So revealing that is part of what we like to call motivational interviewing, which is standard of practice in every business except medicine, I feel like. And part of that is in a very short time, understand what people are going through instead of assuming that, hey, you're coming in and I can't prescribe you medicine, I'm sorry, you know, which is technically the current standard of care in the United States.
Right.
So what's going on at home is the foundation. If I know that you don't have a support structure, you don't have the finances to do it, like, why would I even talk about your diet? Why would I even talk about prescribing you a pharmaceutical drug you can't even afford? It makes no sense, right? And so we want to talk about, okay, before I prescribe you a drug, like, are you okay? Like, what's going on at home? You know, in 2017, August, we had Hurricane Harvey in Houston, which flooded half the city of my house. You know, when people were coming in the week after that, I'm like, we're not talking about drugs. We're not talking about diet changes. We're not about any of this stuff. We're talking about what are your energetics like? What's around you right now? And half the people are displaced. They're living with other people on a second floor, and the first floor is flooded, and they're trying to remediate that, right?
Yeah.
So energy. And that, in speaking about energy, will create trust. Mm-hmm. And that trust will generate even more positive energy. And that's where we see people start to improve. That's where we see these miracles start to happen. I'll tell you, you know, ever since I started Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine in 2017, which is 6 weeks before Hurricane Harvey, I've seen more success stories in these short years than I have in the whole career. And it's just very bizarre to me how I didn't know how to do this or was taught how to do this. And so
what are some of the examples of success stories? Like, what are some of the conditions that, since you started the new clinic, you've been able to have way more success than you would have in your old practice just practicing conventional medicine?
Number one is probably dementia. Like, that's like a bad word in people's vocabulary. People are experiencing early onset Alzheimer's. In reality, there's environmental things that are going on. Mm-hmm. And Tom, you might be surprised to know this. A lot of elderly fake dementia so they can be left alone because they're so depressed.
Huh. Okay.
A dementia evaluation, they will actually test positive on the neuropsych test.
They're faking it. Okay.
And I wouldn't say they're faking it. They actually don't know they're faking it, Tom.
Yeah.
And it's because
they want to be left alone.
Well, they either have like chronic osteoarthritis, chronic pain, they're frail. And they don't want to deal and be reminded daily of frailty. And it's not until we create the conversations, right? Yeah. Hey, you can potentially do X, Y, and Z. All of a sudden, they light up. Wow. All of a sudden, they come out with words that our family's never heard before. Hmm. And another thing is that some people even are severe memory loss. Well, a lot of times, they're stuck. They're stuck in a memory where it's the last memory that they were happy in. Huh. And that last memory was, I don't know, World War II. One of my patients. And at that time, none of his kids were born yet. So he's not going to remember the names of his kids. But what we did is we went with the energy. We're like, okay, now let's go back with you into World War II. What do you see around these days? And they work with my health coaches, and we're able to target things that made him happy. Mm-hmm. And then we bring him back to the present time. It's like, hey, you know, that's Robert. That's your kid right there. That's your son. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden they have like, of course it is. Right. Yeah. Guess what? The brain is stuck in the energetic of a past.
Nice.
Yeah. After that point was some level of collective trauma they experienced stored up over time. And so whenever we did this without, we didn't use any medicine or anything crazy. We didn't use supplements at the very beginning, which is a conversation. That conversation tapped into an energy that they never had a connection before. So that's my most powerful example. And now, you know,
that's really interesting. Before you go to another one, though, just to reinforce that, Alzheimer's is really stuck energy.
Yes. Yeah, so it's stuck energy with a physiologic cascade of different
things. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So are there a couple other things that you've had great success with?
Yeah. Another thing is just autoimmune disease, which in medicine, you know, in medical school and residency, we just taught, you know, it just comes and slaps you in the face and you get diagnosed with it and here's some drugs. You know, it's, you know, consensus, even among rheumatologists. But But in reality, autoimmune disease is just tells you that you're kind of going at the speed of life that's not compatible with your success. And I'll tell you what that means. So really cool example, Tom, and I'll never forget this. I had this person, and I'm not going to use any names here out of privacy. And this person had five children, has five children, and two of them are at the top level of their athletic ability in gymnastics, the very top level. And then the other three are in Taekwondo and different martial arts. And her life consists of waking up, taking her kids to these practices, coming home. And so she spent 16 hours a day outside the home. And then she's really healthy and she's a nutritionist. She's saying, I'm doing these shakes, I'm doing these green smoothies and stuff like that. And it's like all of a sudden she's getting these eczema issues. She's getting like lupus flares and all this stuff like that. And I'm like, and then she did, with another practitioner, she did some tests looking at food intolerances. She was allergic to like 144 different things. Yeah. And I'm not exaggerating, it was actually 144. So that's an actual number. And she's like, I've eliminated myself to these six foods that I can eat. Okay. And I just sit down, my coach is right.
Tough life, man. Six foods you can eat, right?
And I'm like, listen, you know you're allergic to 144 different things because someone looked for 200, you know? If I look for six, she'll be allergic to two maybe. But the more serious note is like, don't change anything in your diet. I just want you to slow down. So what she was doing, she was eating a smoothie. She had a blender in her center console in her Honda Odyssey.
And she was doing it right away. Driving. Yeah.
So what happens is when you do that, your brain is in fight or flight. It's like her brain's in fight or flight. She's driving the van. She's going down in traffic. And it's like trying to drink a smoothie when a tiger is chasing after you. Your body doesn't recognize that. So there's less stomach acid produced. There's less blood flow to the gut. Most of the blood flow are in the shoulders right here. She's real tense. And then so when the food comes in, there's not enough stomach acid to digest the food. And then your immune system comes and say, hey, this is not digested. So I'm going to try to digest it with other different things like bacteria and the other parts of the immune response. And it causes acid reflux, and it causes autoimmune disorders of the esophagus, and it causes all these sort of different bad things, bacterial overgrowth in the gut, and bloating, which she had all that stuff, right? But I'm like, you know what? I don't want you to change anything. And she was very upset at me at the very beginning. Medications
fix me. Come on, fix me, right? You said, don't change anything yet.
I was like, so we got her family. And I was like, all I want y'all to do, and just support your mom. Mm-hmm. Not allowed to eat in the van. Just slow down for 2 weeks. So in about 6 weeks, her bloating got better, and we redid her food allergy and food intolerance panel, and went from 144 to 4.
Wow.
Like now you have 140 things that you can. Like what happened here?
Yeah.
Slow down, and that's the energetics of it. The food was not ingested intentionally. Therefore, it was creating these immune flares and the bodies are reacting to it, okay? Wow. And so I see that so often now that we stop testing for food insensitivities until they can prove to me that they actually slow down, because all I'm doing is waste their money, right?
So what are your top two or three tips on slowing down? This sounds like a big deal that pretty much all of us need to figure out in the life that we're living. You're talking about, taking the kids. I only had two, but I remember it being super hectic with all the athletic events and different things they're doing. And it's kind of thrilling when you're in it, right? Because you're moving and then you don't realize what it's doing to you. How do we slow down in today's day and time? What are your top two or three tips on that?
My best tip is stop the screen time after dark. So phones, the social medias, because we know that blue light stimulates the wakefulness areas of the brain. And I can actually see that on the brain map that we do here. Hmm. That's by far the hardest for a lot of people to do. And also speak your intentions very loud and clear with your loved ones. Okay. Instead of saying, hey, honey, pass me the salt, I say, hey, honey, I would like this to be seasoned a little better. Do you think, salt could be a good addition, right? And so there's different wording that you can say with the people that are around you. Just trying to just tell people what the end result you're trying to achieve is. And then by people understanding where you're trying to go, it empowers other people to give their own energy to you. And a lot of energy healers, actually, they use that energy for themselves, and they try to transfer it to people. So you can see the brain waves. They stick in this sort of low alpha stage, which is just nice and calm and relaxing. And when someone comes in and they sit next to them, their brains also all of a sudden go to this low alpha phase, right? Couples who are really close to each other in relationship, when you put them on a QEG, you're seeing the same patterns. They have identical sleep patterns too. They go into stage one sleep together, stage two sleep, stage three, stage four REM sleep together. These are all things that we see in conventional science that we don't know why it happens, but it's the energetics of it. And so,
what you just said, because I want to make sure, again, people catch this, rather than just pass the salt where you get the salt, but people don't really understand what you're really asking, saying, I like seizing, or you said it better than I did, how could I season this? Or could you help me season this? And now people know the next time, hey, would you like some salt on that? Or they're going to season it before they even serve it to you. Yeah. And so a lot of people are keeping their true intentions or what they want bottled up, which is probably stressful too. And then they're fighting the tide because no one really knows what it is. And that person's not serving you in the way that you would like. You're probably not serving them in the way they would like because they're not expressing it. So what a great idea. What a such a simple and yet elegant tool you just shared with us. That was awesome. I love that.
Your blood pressure will come down.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Because you're not bottling it up, right? That's perfect.
And so another example, Tom, is that those people who are actually diabetic, sometimes when their blood sugar is a little high, I tell them, hey, take a deep breath in and out and then check your blood sugar in a couple minutes. They come down by 15, 20 points. There's a reason.
By breathing.
The energy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how can energy medicine and all this great stuff you're saying it can heal? And I know there's probably a ton more you can tell us because I know you use it in helping people to work through cancer and all sorts of things that you're getting great results in your clinic with. How can it be combined with traditional medicine? Because there's some things in traditional Western medicine, like if you need surgery for a compound fracture, right? You want to go in and you want to do the conventional Western medicine way of healing that wound, putting a rod in it, all those things. Probably penicillin and things like that when there's a really bad infection potentially, and maybe I'm wrong on that, but there's some really good things that we want, the critical care medicine, those type things. How can it be combined though? What's your vision for the future for this?
It's really my vision for the current, because that's exactly what we do here.
Okay.
For lifestyle medicine, you know.
I know you're doing it, but we need more people to do it, right?
Absolutely. There's a simple answer to this. We have great energy with each other. We have great energy with other doctors. And I do think that's why, I got voted top doc in Houston for 2021. It's because I work with the surgeons, I work with anesthesiologists, and there's a lot of communication happening on the back end. That transfer information in the back end already supports the energetics of a patient, right? Their outcome is going to be better. When they go somewhere, they're going to be heard more. And so what's not happening in conventional medicine is that there's not enough time allocated to speaking. Now, there's already not enough time allocated to speak with the patient. There's also not enough time allocated to speaking with the family members and the other doctors. It becomes a very difficult place. But there's changes, especially in 2021, with the new insurance guidelines that's set forth by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services that allow communications to happen. Unfortunately, not a whole lot of doctors know about it. But in the next 5 years, the way that we practice medicine will change. And now there's using technology, telemedicine, right? There's using phone calls and digital visits and secure messaging. So these are all things that are finally recognized by insurance providers so that it could be a standard of care, across America. And that's where we're going in the next 5 years.
I love it. Hey, at the very beginning, you gave us that scary thought that doctors, well-meaning doctors, are prescribing things to people that actually are killing them. And you said you wanted us to take control of our health. You've given us some great ideas on how to do that. And one of the ones that just resonates with me big time is slowing it down a little bit, you know, not getting sped up by life and thinking you've got no control over the pace you go. We all have control. We're just not exercising it. That one thing you told us, you know, turning your screen off after dark. Again, it's going to be a struggle for some people watching this, but if you do that, and that is a struggle for me too. Yeah, a struggle for you. But when they do start to do that, and even if it's not maybe, you know, right after dark, but they were keeping it on till 10 p.m. and now they start, you know, turning it off at 8 p.m. That's a huge change, huge change. Mm-hmm. I love it. Any final thoughts on what you would like to leave the audience with? And then at the end, I'm going to ask you to also tell people how they can get in touch with you, because I know a lot of people are going to want to reach out to you and potentially even go to your clinic. But any final thoughts before we get to that?
Yes. The big takeaway, and as I said in the very beginning, is I want people to be empowered with the fact that they actually have control over their own destiny, right? And it's not just a health issue or an illness issue. It's a life issue. And so too long have doctors been trying to separate between life and health and illness. Right now, they're three different categories, but truly it's not, because they're all bound by energy. My biggest takeaway for people is that the best and the quickest way you can heal is to relieve yourself of guilt and open yourself up to those that are around you. By far the best way.
Why relieve yourself of guilt? Why is that so important?
Because guilt can create such a downward spiral for people that they get stuck in it and it becomes automatic. And by working on that part of yourself and allowing people to come in, you stop that downward spiral and the energetics will just blossom. And day after day, you can start the healing process and it just goes on. And it's fabulous to see when our patients go through it.
I love it. And how do you heal yourself of guilt? Is that forgiving yourself, or what do you recommend?
Man, that's another 3-hour talk, Tom.
Okay.
But the easiest way is to write down and be honest with yourself. What are you guilty of? And then write things around it. Well, what causes it and what triggers it? And by just doing that alone, cry, tear up, look at the pain, right? And by you crying, that energetics comes out, and then you deal with the emotion and then create support structures that are around you. Don't wait for other people to support you. Create your own support structures that are around you. And that's how you.
And crying is actually letting that energy move through you, get it flowing. And I mean, I used to think, how can I cry about something? And I used to hold everything in. You got to be strong. And then, you know, letting things move through you is so freeing and so amazing. What a great gift you've given us. So how do people get in touch with you if they want to reach out? And I know that a lot of people will. What's something that, or how can they get in touch with you and find out more information about you?
There are multiple ways. I'm all over social media.
Okay.
Yeah, just look for my name, Chengran, CHENGRUANMD on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Awesome.
Also, our clinic website is TX Life Med. So TXLIFEMED.org stands for Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do an inquiry on there, and come check us out here in Houston, Texas. We literally see people from all over the world, from next door over here to Saudi Arabia. So,
wow,
it's world a smaller place with telemedicine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I can't give any higher recommendation to a doctor than I would give for you. You're a gift to the world. You really have inspired so many people, including me. And help so many people, help my children, my son. You've helped out my wife, whose mom was suffering as dementia. You've been a huge help for her, and so I just feel so blessed to know you. I'm so glad that you and I were at that conference last year, and I got to know you, and we've had so many interactions throughout the year, and I know you're going to be a friend of mine the rest of my life. So. Thank you so much for being part of our Energy Healing Summit. I encourage everybody to reach out, connect with Cheng, and really find out more about his work. He's a wonderful guide and he can help you become healthy. It takes some work. It's not just taking a pill, but the kind of things that he can share with you and what this whole summit is about are going to build the type of you that will stay healthy. And if something does happen, you'll know how to heal it much quicker than the average person. And so thank you again for being part of this, Cheng, and can't wait to talk to you on our next conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take good care now. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.